40 greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young here in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening, and welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We've talked a lot about Super Bowl 52 coming up Sunday in Minneapolis, Minnesota. By now, you know about the players on the field, but here in the U.S., the Super Bowl is more than just a football game. Some people consider it an unofficial national holiday. Let's take a look at why many people watch the game, and that is for what happens on the television when the players are not throwing, running, and kicking. I'm talking about the commercials. The Super Bowl broadcast is one of the most valuable moneymakers of the year for the network that has the rights to show the game in the U.S. An advertising expert says 30 seconds of TV time sold for $5 million this year. Some of the advertisers, like the Doritos snack chip, are going all in. This year, there is a rap battle between actors Peter Dinklage of Game of Thrones and Morgan Freeman. They lip-sync to rap songs by Busta Rhymes and Missy Elliott. Marketing expert Tony Case explains.
30-second spots are going for $5 million this year, but that's only the beginning for advertisers. They spend many millions more on production, on celebrity endorsers, and so this is a major investment for marketers, but one that they continue to think is pays off because of the massive viewership of the Super Bowl. More than 100 million people watch the Super Bowl. There's nothing even remotely approaching that in terms of a mass audience for advertisers, so it's money well spent for the brands.
That's advertising expert Tony Case talking about the expensive Super Bowl commercials this year. Case also says a lot of the brands are being more sensitive to the way they depict women during the Super Bowl broadcast. In the past, advertisers have used women in bikinis to sell everything from beer to internet hosting.
I think you're going to see advertisers be very careful about how they depict women. They've been doing that in recent years anyway because of the backlash against advertisers like Carl's Jr. and GoDaddy, which have had very sort of sexually charged ads in the past. There's been a lot of negative reaction to that over the years. So now I think there's going to be even more caution on the part of advertisers.
That's marketing expert Tony Case. Another reason even casual sports fans watch the Super Bowl is for the halftime extravaganza. If you remember, in recent years, the halftime act has been Lady Gaga, Coldplay, Beyoncé, and Bruno Mars. This year, it'll be Justin Timberlake. For some more Super Bowl analysis, we turn to Martin Frank of the News Journal from Wilmington, Delaware. Frank covers the Philadelphia Eagles, who are in the Super Bowl for the first time in over 10 years. I asked Martin to tell us what it's like to be at the Super Bowl in Minneapolis.
Well, it's actually kind of interesting because here in Minneapolis, there are a lot of Vikings fans who are very upset. You know, the Eagles beat the Vikings last week in the NFC Championship game, and the Vikings were trying to become the first team to play a Super Bowl in its home stadium in Super Bowl history, and this is the 52nd Super Bowl. So, you know, it was kind of interesting at media night last night when, you know, the PA announcer asked the crowd, so is anybody here rooting for the Eagles? And, you know, everybody started booing, and the Vikings fans chant, you know, did their skull chant. So that was kind of funny. It's very cold here in Minneapolis. So it's kind of different from most Super Bowls, which are played in warm weather cities. But it's actually, you know, you're barely outside because, you know, the teams are both staying at the Mall of America, which is this humongous place. You know, it's the mall is so big it has like a roller coaster and a Ferris wheel and a little mini amusement park in it. So, you know, the teams are both staying at a hotel at the mall. Like, the media is staying at, like, different hotels, like, right next, you know, near the mall and everything. So everything is pretty much indoors. You don't really go outside. You don't really experience the cold air that much. So from that point of view, it's a very interesting, well-run Super Bowl so far. And I think both teams are kind of enjoying the aspect of, like, being able to walk around the mall, you know, at their leisure. I mean, maybe that's not the case for Tom Brady, who's, you know, so much of a star that he probably can't leave his hotel room without being bombarded by people. But pretty much everybody else, you know, can. And, you know, they might sign a few autographs here and there and stuff. But I think the players and everybody's pretty much enjoying this whole experience.
That's Martin Frank covering the Super Bowl for the Delaware News Journal. As you may know, the Eagles have played in but never won the Super Bowl. Martin, what would it mean to people in Philadelphia if the Eagles won the game on Sunday?
Oh my gosh, people in Philadelphia are already going crazy. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, none of this was really expected. Back in, you know, going back to December when Carson Wentz, their star quarterback, you know, tore a knee ligament and was lost for the season. Everyone kind of figured, oh, well, that's it, maybe next year. And, you know, they put together a nice little run. They won both their playoff games at home. They beat Atlanta and then they beat Minnesota last week. So, like, fans are going crazy. I mean, like, before the NFC Championship game last week in Philadelphia, like, you know, the police in the city, like, greased all the light poles so fans wouldn't be climbing up that, you know, to try to get a better vantage point, you know, for celebrations and stuff. And I can only imagine what's going to happen, like, if they win this game on Sunday. I mean, there's obviously going to be a huge parade in the city of Philadelphia. I mean, you know, the city doesn't win many championships in any sports. I mean, the last one was in 2008 with the Phillies. And, you know, when they had the parade downtown, you know, after the World Series, there were over 2 million people there. So I can only imagine, like, what it's going to be like in Philadelphia should the Eagles win on Sunday. It's going to be pretty crazy.
That's Martin Frank covering the Super Bowl for the News Journal in Delaware.
The Voice of America.
I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Let's turn to a form of football that may be more familiar to our listeners. Samson Omale brings us a recap of the soccer news, including the results of Wednesday's African Nations Championship semifinals, featuring games between Morocco and Libya and Sudan and Nigeria, along with the report about the travels of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Gabon and some cricket news. Hello, Samson.
We begin with the latest update from the 2018 CAF African Nations Championship CHAN, where Sudan, Nigeria, Morocco, and Libya were all in action on Wednesday night in the semi-final matches. Host Morocco advanced into the final after defeating Libya 3-1 in extra time. Ayoub El Kaabi got a brace for the Atlas Lions to take his tournament tally to 8 overall. In the second semi-final, the Super Eagles of Nigeria defeated Sudan 1-0 despite an early injury to their first-choice goalkeeper and captain, Ikechukwu Ezenwa, and a red card to Ifeanyi Ifeanyi to set up an exciting final with host Morocco on Sunday. Shortly after the match, I spoke with some football fans back here in Abuja who surprisingly have favoured Morocco to lift the trophy.
The Moroccans are a better side than Nigeria. We only struggle to get through the group stages. You know, they play more delightful brand of football. They play more robust football. They are by and large a better side than Nigeria.
It's going to be very difficult for the Super Eagles of Nigeria. Number one, Morocco is playing at home, and they will have all the support from their fans at home.
Well, unarguably, they've been the best of teams so far in the competition. and you just get the feeling that they both deserve it. Even though the Moroccans have been able to sweep aside most of the teams with so much ease, it's been a bit topsy-turvy for the Nigerians. They've been able to grow into the tournament. Their first game, they drew against the Rwandans before they won their final two matches.
Staying with football news, 2015 CAF African Footballer of the Year and Gabon's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang joined English Premiership side Arsenal for £56 million for a deadline day record transfer deal for Arsenal. The Gabon striker, who scored 141 goals in 213 games for Dortmund, including 21 in 24 matches this season, in his first interview said he was delighted to join a great team like Arsenal.
I'm really happy to be here in this great team. I think the club have such a big history, and they had the great players like Thierry Henry, so it's an example for our strikers.
Elsewhere in cricket news, the South African national cricket team, the Proteas, will be looking to strike the balance between results and a look to the future when they take on India in the first Momentum One-Day International ODI at Sahara Stadium, Kingsmead, on Thursday. Proteas captain Fab du Plessis says,
"It's important the last 2 days we wanted to step up the intensity a little bit, make sure we get through quite intense fielding. As you know, one day cricket is very important to your fielding is up to standard. So, yeah, two hard practices ready for the game tomorrow."
And that's it for the sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. And a reminder, the finals of the African Nations Tournament features host Morocco against Nigeria this Sunday. Now for some Olympic chat. The Winter Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea, open on February 9th. I spoke about this and other Olympic news with Christine Brennan, a sports columnist for USA Today and an analyst for ABC News. I asked Christine about what comes next for Olympic and youth sports in the United States after the sentencing last week of Olympic gymnastics and Michigan State University Dr. Larry Nassar, who was found guilty of sexually abusing hundreds of young women gymnasts over the years.
Certainly this is a watershed moment, or we hope it's a watershed moment, Dan. It's the worst scandal in U.S. Olympic history, the darkest stain, darkest mark, black mark on U.S. Olympic the Olympic movement in the U.S., and also certainly the worst sports sex abuse scandal ever. So that's saying a lot right there. The resignation of the entire board of USA Gymnastics, of course, 10 months ago, the CEO was forced out. These are good first steps, but there has to be an entire culture change, which everyone's saying there needs to be a change. We'll see how that goes, with the athletes' voices being heard. And you have to have younger leadership. It has to be more diverse. Certainly has to be more female than male at this point. I think you can say that about a lot of the national governing bodies and about the U.S. Olympic Committee itself. This was as if there's a 20th century answer, maybe a 19th century answer to a 21st century problem, and it just cannot continue. So moving forward, sponsors have suspended their sponsorship right now. Obviously, that affects money, that affects training, that affects everything moving in the pipeline, and no one wants the future gymnasts of the world to be adversely affected by this horror story of Larry Nassar, former doctor, and just the way the adults failed the young athletes in the system. But I think that hopefully the money, the sponsorship will come back once the changes are seen as real and profound. But I would have brought in Allie Raisman and Rachel Den Hollander and a couple others yesterday if I were the U.S. Olympic Committee or the USA Gymnastics as some kind of athlete at large or ombudsperson or voice, athlete ally. I think those great Olympians and Den Hollander, who was not Olympian, but I would bring them in and have them be some kind of liaison, even if it's just a figurehead role. They're so powerful. Their voices are so important. And they've been such leaders and such heroes in this whole situation.
I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young here in Washington on the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America. I'm speaking with Christine Brennan, the sports columnist for USA Today and an analyst for ABC News. She's getting ready to head to South Korea to cover the Olympics once again. Christine, I was reading recently about the Russian Olympic team that was touched by the doping scandal at the previous Winter Olympics in Sochi. The Olympic Committee decided to punish the Russian team by not allowing them to compete at the Olympics under their flag. But instead, they're going to be known as Russian athletes.
The choice was ban all the Russians. Blanket ban, gone. No one gets a second chance. And obviously have some clean athletes, some newer athletes, some athletes who have been training in the West or competing. So figure skaters who go to Skate America, Skate Canada, Japan, China, and get tested there would then be able to show that they were clean. You would lose them, and that would be unfortunate. But the other side of it, which is what's happened, is that you don't ban the Russians, all of them, blanket ban. You officially call it a ban, and there are some sanctions, and I think they're kind of, I do think they're important. But you do allow the athletes then to come back in if they can prove they're clean. Well, presuming that you've got some athletes who may or may not be clean, you then have a situation where clean athletes playing by the rules from countries that are playing by the rules in the West or in Asia, whether it's Canada, whether it's Germany, France, England, you name it, Japan, South Korea, those athletes might finish fourth, and this is just the ultimate and sad sports story, where you finish fourth, and even if they years later find out that someone cheated above you, gold, silver, bronze, they move you up, usually instead of having that wonderful medal ceremony on the spot, on the day, where the world is cheering you as you see your flag go up and you see your anthem played if you win the gold, you hear that. If instead of that, you get a FedEx or whatever with a medal in it and you open it at your kitchen table. And that is your medal ceremony. And that is just unbelievable that that has been allowed to happen. The moment is gone and the record book has changed, but you lose the opportunity to have that great Olympic moment. So to me, you're going to have athletes getting shafted one way or the other. I think the better choice would have been to have the Russian athletes, any clean Russian athletes, get shafted because it was their government, and you've got to teach them a lesson, and you have to say you can't get away with this. So that would have been me. I'd be the law and order candidate if I ran for office, which I'm not. So I would have kicked them all out, no chance of coming back. One time, just total ban to prove the point to Putin on down that this is unacceptable. That did not happen, as you've alluded to, and there will be. U.S. will have 242 athletes. The Olympic athletes from Russia, OAR, has a real nice ring to it, will have, as you said, 169. There's still several athletes going through CAS, about two dozen, three dozen, the Court of Arbitration for Sport. We'll see if some of them get are allowed to come in. You know, there's going to be change and movement on this and fluidity really until probably the opening ceremony. I will say this as a positive about what this is going to what's happening. Obviously, Russia is not officially there. Now, we know there are Russian athletes, but in terms of the record book, 20 years from now, Dan, when somebody is studying what happened at the 2018 Games and looks online and sees the official medal total, they will see that Russia had zero medals. That is going to be their number. No silver, no gold, no bronze. That's it. Zero. That is satisfying for those of us who believe the Russians have cheated their brains out and have deprived good, solid people not cheating of medals and have tainted the Olympics. That is good, and that does mean something because Putin, Vladimir Putin, so wanted to win the medal count in Sochi 4 years ago at the games he hosted. They did win it. Obviously, those medals, many of them have been taken away, some of them, and they have fallen to, I think, fifth now in the medal count, and the U.S. won it. I personally couldn't care less about medal counts, but Putin cared about it. So from that standpoint, I do think there is a punishment. And instead of hearing the Russian anthem or seeing the Russian flag, it will be, of course, the Olympic flag and the Olympic hymn. That also is significant. It really does make a point. And someone tuning in who's been paying no attention, who all of a sudden hears the Olympic hymn and says, what happened to the Russian, or look at the flag, well, then they'll know. And I think those things do matter. I think it would have been even better to have even more of a punishment. But I think that is a bit of a punishment. And I do think we have to kind of, at this point, be satisfied with that.
Christine, thanks. That's a great point. I'm speaking with Christine Brennan, columnist for USA Today and analyst for ABC News. I'm Dan Friedel in Washington here on the sunny side of sports. Christine, we've seen a lot of rhetoric between leaders of North Korea, South Korea, the United States. Some concern last fall about whether these Winter Games in South Korea could perhaps be tarnished by an act of war. Certainly seeing North Korea do all of its missile testing in the last 12 months had people on the edge of their seats about what was going to happen here in these upcoming games in February. Do these Olympics have a chance to be more important to diplomacy than any other Winter Olympics in recent memory? We've already heard about some North Korean athletes joining the South Korean team, for example, in women's ice hockey. It looks like maybe there'll be a chance for a little bit of togetherness between these two countries that have been divided for so many years. What do you think the effect will be sort of off the playing field of these Olympics?
I do think that's a great point. I think there is a real chance that this hopefully could work out, which would be lovely. You know, I've covered that. This is my 18th Olympics in a row, winter and summer, going back to L.A. in 84, which means I covered the 88 games in Seoul, the Summer Olympics, almost 30 years ago. And I remember the stories. There were great fears going into those games because, of course, keep in mind, as so many of your listeners know, that the North and the South have had guns pointed at each other for, 70 years now. So, and I did go to the DMZ, and I walked around the table and went into North Korea for a couple seconds, a few steps, and then back around the table into South Korea back in 88. So, it's very clear and present how close you are to an enemy, to a war zone, actually, a potential war zone. And back in 88, there was real concern that the North Koreans were going to flood, literally open their floodgates and flood their rivers and send the flooded waters down to Seoul and flood Seoul. And it didn't happen. And thankfully, of course, it didn't. And, of course, so many Olympics we hear about terrible things, and they don't happen. So knock on wood, as I get ready to go, that, again, any huge concerns, and we understand them with Donald Trump and his tweeting and Kim Jong-un and his comments and the rhetoric between the two, as well as, of course, concerns about North Korea from around the world, understandably and rightly. There's real hope that maybe this will be that sports could take us to a place that we hope it would, which is a sense of camaraderie and friendship. I don't know that we want to. Can we say détente? Can we say peace? That would be the ultimate goal. But right now, I guess we can stick with the baby steps of friendship and working together, as the North Koreans and the South Koreans are supposed to be walking into the opening ceremony together. We'll see it when believe it when it happens. I hope it does. Anything can change, of course, in the last minute. But that they've said they'll come in together as a team, that the women's ice hockey, the South Korean team, which has been together for quite a while with a Canadian coach, a woman who was quoted last week saying she thinks she's going to be still, she gets to coach her team. Well, they've added some North Koreans to the team, and my sense is that the North Koreans are not as good as the South Korean hockey players. So is this going to be a little like adding a few, Class A ball players or college ball players to the Houston Astros, and then telling the Houston Astros manager that he has to play them? This will be interesting, and I hope the coach gets her way and is able to play who she wants. But I could see a scenario where that could become a very interesting internal story to cover in sports, the South Korean team with the North Koreans, now called the Korean women's ice hockey team, will be fascinating to watch. And we believe now the North Korean pairs figure skaters, who finished 15th at the Worlds last year, a very reputable finish, that they could also be competing. So you're going to have some North Korean athletes there competing on this Korean team. That is a wonderful turn of events, and the South Koreans themselves are quite good at winter sports and have been for years, and to incorporate North Korea, I think, is a wonderful gesture, and even if it doesn't mean anything athletically, except a 15th, top, maybe a 10th place finish in figure skating, and maybe who knows what the team will do behind the U.S. and Canada and others in women's ice hockey, it does send a great, great message, and I think that the world can use that message right now.
That's Christine Brennan from USA Today on her way to South Korea. And that wraps up the February 1st edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Sunny Young for inviting me in this week. Thanks also to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger and to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, has served the two terms permitted under the country's constitution. It is someone else's turn to seek office. A crisis ensued when Kabila failed to organize timely elections and stepped down. Following negotiations, Kabila's ruling party and the opposition coalition signed the Saint Sylvester Accord. President Kabila agreed not to seek a third term or change the constitution. He would remain in office until the installation of his successor, following elections which would be held by the end of December 2017. But there were no elections in the DRC last year, nor will any be held until December 2018 at the earliest. And now President Kabila's party is talking about changing the constitution to allow him to run for another term. The president's refusal to step down and the political machinations that have delayed elections over and over again have caused a political crisis, heightened insecurity, and triggered a series of street protests in which scores of people have been killed. On December 31st, the Catholic Lay Coordinating Committee organized peaceful demonstrations where security forces used excessive force against unarmed participants. Another peaceful protest was scheduled for Sunday, January 21st. Authorities prepared for the demonstration by preemptively shutting down internet and SMS services and forbade gatherings of more than five people. When the peaceful protest nonetheless took place, they shot tear gas and live ammunition into the crowd, killing at least seven people, injuring nearly another hundred, and arresting dozens. We condemn in the strongest terms the violence perpetuated by the DRC security forces on January 21st against church-led peaceful protests, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. We are appalled that the DRC government, including President Kabila, would employ repressive tactics and disproportionate use of lethal force against civilians, including religious leaders and children, exercising their democratic rights to call for credible and inclusive elections, she said. The use of lethal force against Congolese citizens and the cutting of internet and SMS services undermine the democratic process, obstruct implementation of the Saint Sylvester Accord, and contravene international human rights norms. We call on President Kabila to hold accountable security force members who fired on civilians or ordered the use of lethal force, and urge him and his government to ensure a peaceful and open electoral process so that credible elections are held as scheduled in December 2018.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.